Lesson number 11, Public Pledges. What is the difference between a revival and a reformation? The re, with which both words start, means again. Vival comes from the verb vivo, I live. So revival is reviving or reliving. A life which had started previously but has died down and shows few signs of vigor. It exists in a weak form, but badly needs reviving. Reformation, reformation, is a restructuring of the lifestyle that is broken down. Revival has to do with life, the principle. Reformation has to do with the lifestyle, the nitty-gritty of moment-by-moment living. Point number one, keeping our promises to God. Last week we considered how the people of God entered into a covenant with Him. We shall now study the four areas in which they determined by the grace of God to make changes. These reforms were first in marriage practices, second, Sabbath observance, third, land management, fourth, business dealing. They had turned from God's rules in these areas and had followed the practices of their heathen neighbors, thinking that they would gain material advantage in so doing. But they had sadly learned that these heathen policies, these practical business policies of the world, brought leanness of soul and little material advantage. In Steps to Christ, Ellen White says, God does not require us to give up anything that it is for our best interest to retain. In all that He does, He has the well-being of His children in view. Would that all who have not chosen Christ might realize that He has something vastly better to do than they had in seeking for themselves. Man is doing the greatest injury and injustice to his own soul when he thinks and acts contrary to the will of God. No real joy can be found in the path forbidden by Him who knows what is best and who plans for the good of His creatures. The people then decided to pay a faithful tithe for the support of God's work. They hadn't been true to God. They had been robbing God. They had been robbing the Levites and ministers whom they should have supported. They were deflecting this money into wrong channels. Now there was a revival in tithe-paying and stewardship. Point number two, reorganization of city and community. Although the walls had been completed, the enemy had by no means given up their harassments, and attacks might be expected at any moment. In consequence, Nehemiah arranged for armed watchers, organized by shifts, to be on constant alert. There were several mixed multitude leaders who were married to women from among the enemy. But Hanani was true. He could be trusted. After discussion, they decided to open the gates later in the day and shut them earlier in the afternoon. The fields and orchards were located outside the walls, and so it was arranged that where possible, the people could live near their fields to protect them from the marauding enemies. Others volunteered to live in the ruins of the city, which of course had not yet been completely rebuilt. As we have noted previously, the Spirit had seen fit to record the names of scores of persons in the church registry who had fulfilled various duties. No one was lost sight of in the divine records. We should remember that the very hairs of our heads are all numbered. Our names, if faithful, are recorded in heaven. And again I want to repeat, we read in Ezra and Nehemiah lists and lists of people. These lists were kept at the dictation of the Spirit to these inspired authors to keep a record. And the message of these names is not to bore us today, but to encourage us that God has a roster of His elect. No one is lost in the divine record. Point number 3, provisions for temple worship. After the initial steps had been taken to reform, and the people dedicated themselves to support the temple and its workers, Nehemiah organized the distribution of the funds. He compiled a worker list of all the priests to determine how the funds should be distributed, and to rearrange the priests and Levites, singers and porters, into the 24 courses decided upon by David 5 centuries before. First, the people must put away from the marriage and business entanglements that they had entered into with the heathen, all that opposed the purposes of God. God had declared the Ammonites and Moabites were not to be accepted into the congregation. But what about Ruth the Moabitess? Was she not accepted into the family of God's people? How come? While she remained a Moabite, she was excluded. But when she pledged, "Thy God is my God, and thy people my people," she was born again. She was welcomed into Israel, accepted by God as the ancestress of His son, grandmother of David. Does not matter what we have been. It only matters what we become through Christ. And these enemies who persisted in their rebellion, they were to be excluded. But any among them, Samaritans, Ammonites, Moabites, Edomites, Horites, who chose to accept God, born again, would be adopted into the family of God. Part number 4, dedication of the wall. After the wall had been completed, Nehemiah organized a service of joyful and grateful dedication. Not only must the structure be consecrated to God, but the workmen, the priests, Levites, people, must also be made holy. Holiness is wholeness for God. This ceremony was to say that everyone, that everything that they had done, was now being given to Him whose property it was all the time anyway. In the splendor of the occasion, the dignity of the leaders, happiness of men, women, and children everywhere, songs of massed choirs, music of the orchestras, gladness spread over the still battered city as it had not for well over 2 centuries. "Rejoice in the Lord always, and again I say rejoice," rang over the battlements. "If we would guard our words," Medical Ministry 213, "so that nothing but kindness shall escape our lips, we will give evidence that we are preparing to become members of the heavenly family." After spending 12 years in governing the provinces of Judea, Nehemiah returned to the Persian court. However, during his absence, the promises the rulers had made, the people of the oath that they had taken to remain covenant relationship with God, crumbled into the dust. When he returned, Nehemiah discovered to his horror that almost the same areas of apostasy he had sought to correct years before were again areas of apostasy. First, priestly misconduct. The high priest, Eliashib, had allowed Tobiah the Ammonite to live in the temple apartment in which the meal offerings should have been stored. This meant that there were no meal offerings. This indicated that God's people no longer dedicating their material resources, their produce, no longer given to the Lord, only used for themselves. Nehemiah immediately evicted Tobiah, cleansed the chambers, reinstated these offerings for all Israel. 2. Tithing failure. Once again, the tithes were being withheld. Ezra worked upon them, preached his sermons on stewardship, and declared that the tithes should be brought to the treasurers. If you look in the margin, that's the same as the storehouses, because the tithes were not money or checks, they were a material thing, needed to have storehouses. In England, in connection with some of the ancient cathedrals, there are tithe barns to be seen today. So Nehemiah brought about a reformation in tithes and offerings and stewardship generally. Part number 3, Sabbath breaking. This was again prevalent. People from Tyre and Sidon and other pagan countries were bringing their wares and selling them in Jerusalem. Nehemiah remonstrated with them. Then they'd park outside the wall, ready to start as soon as the Sabbath ended. He remonstrated with them and told them if they came again, he'd chase them away. So he tried to bring back Sabbath observance. It was Sabbath desecration as one of the forces that brought about the 70 years captivity. So he reminded Israel that they should reform. And fourthly, mixed marriages were again being entered into by every class of the people. In each of these areas, Nehemiah instituted strict reforms based on the spiritual relationships of the people to their Lord and Master. A revival and a reformation must take place, Ellen White says, under the ministration of the Holy Spirit. Revival and reformation are two different things. Revival signifies a renewal of the spiritual life, a quickening of the powers of mind and heart, a resurrection from spiritual death. Reformation signifies a reorganization, a change of ideas and theories, habits and practices. Reformation will not bring forth the good fruit of righteousness unless it is connected with the revival of the Spirit. Revival and reformation are to do their appointed work. And in doing this work, they must blend. And we today, living in time's last hour, need nothing more than a revival and reformation. We need to have our lives revived. We need to have a restructuring of our lifestyle. We know what should be done. We are aware of our needs. May God help us to permit the Spirit to bring our awareness into practical relationship with His grace.